Hello. The title of my talk today is Reproductive Isolation Between Diabrotica barbarae Smith and Lawrence and Diabrotica longicornisae, both in Coleoptera chrysomelidae. So Diabrotica barbarae is commonly known as the northern corn rootworm. It's an important pest of corn throughout the United States Corn Belt. And we also have, and you can see a picture of this here, there's also its sister species, Diabrotica longicornisae, which is not a pest of any crops that we have. It's commonly found in grasslands, particularly associated with water, so like in river drainages, in the southwestern United States and Mexico. Here you can actually see the ranges of the two species, Diabrotica barbarae and Diabrotica longicornis. These two species ranges do overlap in eastern and central Nebraska and Kansas, as you can see here. And work by Golden had looked at the cuticular hydrocarbons of these two, the cuticular hydrocarbon profiles of these two species, and had actually found differences between the two species, and had also found some individuals that seemed to have intermediate hydrocarbon profiles. And so with that work, we had actually then pursued hybridization as part of my dissertation work. And it had been suggested, and it does appear to be, that the hybrid cross is unidirectional. So if the beetle, or the hybrid offspring has a longicornis mother and a barbarae father, then the life history traits of these offspring will be comparable to the parent species. However, if we look at the reverse cross with a longicornis father and a barbarae mother, we have a lot of life history traits where it actually has low viability. So there's low egg production, and as you can see here, there's quite a variety of things that go wrong with this cross. And so one of the questions of my research is, what causes this unidirectional hybridization? And one of the things that we have not tested yet, but that could be a possibility, is Wolbachia in this system. As you can see from the characteristics here, Wolbachia is a possibility. However, Wolbachia has not been found to date in Diabrotica longicornis or in Western populations of Diabrotica barbarae. And so we were also trying to think of other mechanisms that might be causing this incompatibility. Based on some observational data in the lab of mating behavior, one of the things that we thought might be happening is that hybridization might be unidirectional simply because male Diabrotica longicornis do not mate with heterospecific females. And so then we actually formed the hypothesis that Diabrotica longicornis males will have low mating frequency with Diabrotica barbarae females. To test this, we looked at virgin males and females of both species. These beetles were derived from colonies that we had obtained from southwestern Minnesota for Diabrotica barbarae and from southwestern Nebraska for Diabrotica longicornis, and we consider these to be allopatric populations so that we wouldn't have any hybrids already involved. The pairs were held at room temperature from anywhere from 1 to 11 days. We were curious to see that if the length of pairing would make any difference in mating. And then females were dissected and examined for the presence of a spermatophore. We also looked at several other variables just to see if these would have any effect on mating, such as head capsule, age of beetles, the duration of pairing, whether or not a spermatophore was transferred, and then the spermatophore volume if there was one. To analyze these data, we used ANOVA and SAS's PROC Mixed, and then also for the spermatophore transfer, we used a regression model in SAS's PROC Logistic. To give you an idea of what this looks like, in case none of you have ever dissected a Diabrotica beetle, on the left side, we have an unmated female, and on the right side, a mated female. You can see in both pictures here the spermatheca, which is heavily sclerotized. And what you can really tell initially is there can be some color differences between mated and unmated females, but the main thing is going to be the size difference between the bursa copulatrix in an unmated female versus a mated female. And you can also see here in this mated female the actual spermatophore. It's fairly distinct, and it's a pretty solid mass within the bursa. Mating duration in this experiment was not significant. The average was about 4 to 5 days, and so I'm not going to talk any more about that today. But overall, Diabrotica longicornis males had lower rates of spermatophore transfer than Diabrotica barbarae males. You can see here in this table overall that barbarae males, whether they were mating with heterospecific or conspecific females, that they had a fairly high probability of mating. However, if we look at the longicornis males, again, whether it's with heterospecific or conspecific females, they had a fairly low probability of mating. And looking at the age and size to see if that had any effect. Overall, in comparing Barbarae females and Longicornis females, there were no differences in the average age of the beetles that were used for this experiment. We did try to keep male and female ages kind of similar with what we knew about Diabrotica, and we made some assumptions here. There was a difference in head capsule size between Barbarae females and head capsule width between Barbarae females and Longicornis females, but this isn't really a surprise based on previous work, and this does affect then the female to male head capsule ratios also. In males, we had no difference in the male beetles that were used in age or in head capsule width. However, if we looked at males that mated versus those that did not mate, we actually did find some interesting differences. So in looking at males that did not mate, there were no differences between Barbarae males and Longicornis males. However, when we looked at those that did mate, the Longicornis males that did mate were significantly older by about 6 days, as you can see here, versus the Barbarae males that did mate. And so this was kind of a surprising difference that we didn't expect to see. Another surprising difference was actually in spermatophore size between these two species. There are no genitalia differences between these two species. This is one of the reasons that they've traditionally been considered sister species, is that genitalia are usually used to distinguish the species of Diabrotica. However, it doesn't work for these two species, and so this was actually a surprise to see that the mean spermatophore volume of Diabrotica longicornis is significantly greater and about twice the size of the spermatophore from a Diabrotica barbarae male. And as you can see here with the minimum and maximum volumes of the spermatophores that were obtained in this experiment, there's not really any overlap between these spermatophore sizes. So overall, to conclude, Diabrotica longicornis males in this experiment had similar frequency of mating with both heterospecific and conspecific females. And unfortunately, that didn't give any support for the hypothesis that longicornis males mate differentially with heterospecific and conspecific females. However, it was in this experiment, and so we have to qualify that a little bit. And these results do actually point to maybe the cytoplasmic incompatibility, either caused by Wolbachia or caused by something else, and we're not entirely sure what that might be yet. Overall, though, we can make some general conclusions. Diabrotica longicornis males did mate less frequently than Diabrotica barbarae males. This may be an inherent biological difference, but at this point, we don't have the information to say that for sure. There also may be some issues with the Diabrotica longicornis males tried to be older. Again, as I mentioned earlier, we had tried to match Barbarae males and longicornis males and have them to be similar ages based on what we knew about Diabrotica mating, which isn't that much. And so we may have actually biased the experiment a little bit. The other possibility is that Diabrotica longicornis males may need different conditions for mating. However, we have gotten very good results from my fitness data in the lab under similar conditions. However, what we can say is that the difference in spermatophore size appears to be an inherent difference, and this may actually lead to differences in mating because longicornis males may need more time to develop this larger spermatophore. They may put more investment into mating than Barbarae males do. To look overall, the subject of my dissertation is to actually look at the potential for hybridization between these two species. One of the things we have to keep in mind is that though these species do occur in the same areas, there's a need for habitat overlap, essentially, when there's mating going on. So there needs to be temporal and spatial overlap during mating. However, given what we know and the little bit that I've presented about the fitness of these beetles, we can make a pretty good, or we have a pretty good idea that at least if the beetles would come in contact at the right time, that this cross here would be successful because the Barbarae males have a high probability of mating, just in general. And looking at this, what I've been calling the bad hybrid cross, if we think about that, the longicornis males have a much lower probability of mating, at least in the experiment we have done, but also they have low viability overall, which suggests that they wouldn't be very likely to be found in the field. And this does actually, this work actually does point to some surprising differences in reproductive reproductive qualities between the two species. We actually didn't expect to find a spermatophore size difference, and it's a pretty major difference. And so this actually suggests that there may be more subtle differences between these two species that we haven't been able to find as of yet, or that they may be a little too subtle for us to have noticed easily. With that, I'd like to finish up with a picture of Konza Prairie in Manhattan, Kansas, where you can find both of these two species. Buffalo gourd over here, where you can typically find Diabrotica longicornis, and corn over here, where you can typically find barberry. So the habitat separation is not usually that great between these two species. I would also like to acknowledge Aaron Blankenship for statistical assistance, and Sarah Holt and Zach Smith for help in larval rearing and in beetle maintenance. And with that, I'll take any questions, and thank you. Yes.
If you look at the common names and scientific names of the species going back 30 years, it goes from longicornis, and I think the 89 one is listed as a subspecies. Could you briefly discuss the history of the taxonomy from about 50 years ago to and when did they find out? What is the current opinion between taxonomists, whether it's a subspecies or a developed species?
Okay, well, I'll step back a little bit further, actually, than 50 years. Diabrotica longicornis was originally described in Colorado around 1820. Then in the 1860s and 70s, there was a beetle that looked similar that was attacking corn in Illinois that was also assumed to be longicornis. In 1967, they were separated out as subspecies, primarily based on color, but also economic impact. And then in 1983, they were separated out as full species based on color differences, habitat differences, behavior, some mating behavioral differences. They had taken it to insemination. There's actually no one working on the system currently except for me. So right now, I would support that they are still separate species. It does look like the habitat overlap, particularly while they would be mating, might be kind of minimal. So we don't know yet, and one of the difficulties is actually identifying a larval host of Diabrotica longicornis.
Thank you. I'm going to wrap it down.